Diabetes Insights, Breakthroughs and Innovators. The EASD TV podcast from the annual meeting of the European Association for the Study of Diabetes.
Hello, you're watching EASD TV. Now, we have a spotlight stage at the Congress this year. We had one last year, and it was so popular that we've got another one, and there are lots more sessions on it. And I'm going to introduce you to two people who were debating, well, debating, having a bit of an argument between themselves on that stage. Mark Heusing from Davis in California, and Guy Rutter from the University of Montreal. And you were talking about islet networks. So let's have the two sides of this debate. Let's start with you.
Well, I suppose the two sides of the debate, but they're not very far apart, are that the cells within
They're not very good at having debates, are they?
we're too friendly. There are, of course, other cells than beta cells, insulin-secreting cells in the islet that secrete glucagon and other hormones, and it's long been thought to be important that these cells release other hormones which may influence and control the activity of the insulin-secreting beta cells. And what Mark will tell you in a moment was arguing was that they have a particularly important role in controlling insulin secretion. I was taking the other side of the coin, is that we know that we can eliminate all of those other cells artificially in a mouse, and insulin secretion is pretty normal. So our position is that there are subsets of beta cells themselves which have controlling roles as pacemakers and leaders and so forth, and that that is a little bit more important than the paracrine effects of the other cell types.
So he not only put his own argument, but he also said yours too.
So I guess we'll have a little debate right now then. So clearly, without beta cells, you can't produce insulin. And everybody's been focusing on beta cells because if you lose those, you get type 1 diabetes. If you lose your beta cell function, you get type 2 diabetes. And no such disorders exist for the alpha cells and the delta cells. So it's never been up for question that beta cells are crucial. Without beta cells, you unless you have a sort of insulin, you die. The importance of these other cells, I mean, until recently, I still was asked, well, who cares about these delta cells? They're only 5%.
Oh, people are so cruel.
And so we actually went out to determine this. And we specifically, and this is why mouse models are useful, because you can do these types of things. We figured out a way to specifically remove just the delta cells. And what you actually see is they do matter. They're not going to make the mice all of a sudden kill over from diabetes. What happens actually is because these delta cells, which release a hormone that's called somatostatin. Somatostatin was initially discovered as the hormone that inhibits growth hormone release. Here it inhibits insulin secretion. And if you remove these delta cells, you in effect remove the brake on the beta cell. And by removing the brake on the beta cell, your beta cells release just a little bit more insulin. And that's enough to cause your glycemia, your blood glucose levels, to drop a little bit lower. Not enough to cause you to develop severe hypoglycemia, but just removing those 5% of these delta cells is enough to change something that is really important, your blood sugar levels, to a new set point that is significantly lower. So that is the power of this local crosstalk by only a handful of cells. That's the control they exert over these beta cells. Now, can you do without that control? Yeah, you can. Just beta cells get the job done perfectly fine. It's not nearly as good or stable as our own pancreas is. Here's the analogy. Like all of us, if we're hoping to live to an 80, we're going to have about 90,000 meals over the course of a lifetime. And every single one of those times, unless we have diabetes, we don't have to think about our glucose control being perfectly controlled. Our islets do this for us, and they're very good at that. Now, just providing back some beta cells is not going to approach that level of really sophisticated, careful control, but it's going to do a pretty good job. And the argument then is, what do these delta cells and these alpha cells do? Well, they do actually quite a bit, but what they do is they really make those beta cells work that much more dependable, that much more precisely than they would do on their own.
So take more notice of cells other than beta cells.
Yeah, I think one of the features that Mark has just alluded to is that even if the islet will work without these other cells, it's really important that over time, it may be beta cells are sort of terminally differentiated and they last your whole life. And having them work optimally is very important if they're going to survive. We know that one of the characteristics of type 2 diabetes is these cells become dysfunctional, some of them die. And if we can reduce the rate at which they die, perhaps we'll reduce the rate at which people convert to type 2 diabetes. So even if the system isn't perfect, it's better to have it perfect for survival of the cells.
So you were on the spotlight stage. Did the audience get involved?
Well, they didn't mob us or anything, but yes, they were involved. They seemed to be engaged, and there were questions from the audience at the end.
And what kind of questions were you getting? Were you feeling exposed, or were you feeling triumphant?
I think we were just engaging in the debate that this whole job is about, right? Going, put your best effort out there, and engaging in conversation with colleagues to try and figure out at the end of the day, our job is to be not always right. Our job is to sometimes be wrong, because from going the wrong direction and learning from the work of yourself and colleagues that, you know what, maybe there is a different way of looking at this. That's how I think science progresses. I mean, and in that vein, we got comments and questions. That's why it is so important to do these types of things.
So I'm slightly taking a mickey at your expense. My apologies. But actually, this is a really important point because, you know, you're being provocative and deliberately, and actually that provocation is enough to make people start thinking that there is actually more to life than the beta cell.
Yes. And I mean, an important point which was raised, you asked about a question from the audience, is how relevant to the human case are our studies in mouse. So that was something that we had to deal with. And the defense to that is that these experiments are far more difficult to do in human systems. Perhaps there's going to be tractability when we can produce, which we can now, produce beta-like cells from stem cells. And this may facilitate these studies, but they're still difficult to do. It's far more powerful. The more powerful system is to use transgenic mice, which have reporters expressed from birth. Yeah, so I think that's...
And a reflection might be that actually here we are 100 years or so since insulin was discovered, mm-hmm. and yet, there's still so much that we don't know about the islet cells and the islet network.
So when I joined this field, I thought that we knew it all.
Yes.
And I was surprised how much there still was to learn. Now, to the relevance of to the human patient, I mean, clearly it is. I mean, the feedback, the crosstalk that we learn about in mouse models, when we then look for evidence of that same crosstalk being present in humans, being different in diseased humans with diabetes, the answer is yes. That same subtle feedback control that exerts inhibition on the beta cell, there is clear evidence that it breaks down or gets downregulated in human patients before they have clinical diabetes, in the pre-diabetes stage. So these local crosstalk pathways that we demonstrate are important in setting something as important as the blood glucose levels, they are clearly subject to regulation in real humans that were really pre-diabetic and already show evidence that crosstalk is altered, probably in an attempt to try and get as much insulin released as they can. Basically, if you're faced with a body that doesn't listen to insulin very well, one logical thing to do is to take the brake on the beta cell and shut it down so that you can squeeze as much insulin out of your beta cells as you can. That will work for a little bit. That probably contributes to why there is hyperinsulinemia early on in type 2 diabetes. But clearly, over time, these beta cells just can't sustain that level of demand, and they succumb. We did not evolve to be well suited to deal with a sedentary lifestyle and lots of overnutrition. So that's an argument that I think everybody's well familiar with. But in the short term, that dynamic control, that modulation, is constantly in play, and clearly it becomes a problem in the context of type 2 diabetes, where we found ourselves in the last one or two generations.
It's a fascinating area. Thank you for bringing it to our attention. And actually, it illustrates something that the EASD does particularly well, I think, showcases basic science and actually shows just how important it is in developing new theories and new hypotheses for treatments for the future. So thank you both, and stay with EASD TV.
Thank you for joining us on the podcast of the European Association for the Study of Diabetes. We hope you enjoyed today's insights. If you did, go ahead and hit subscribe, and you'll always stay up to date with the latest in diabetes research and discoveries. And if you'd like to dive deeper, you can find plenty more information at EASD.org.